Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 661. It's the 13th of December, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Ed Dawson, CEO of Prospects Oil & Gas, that's PXOG, and he talks about yesterday's spud and today's news regarding their COLA license onshore in Poland there. Plus, I also have full-time investor Wheelie Dealer talking strategy and stocks, and he covers Sky, GSK, AstraZeneca, National Grid, IG Index, Utility Wise, 32 Red, PaySafe Group. It's not a lot we don't cover, I think. Also, I have today's suggested one for your watchlist, suggested by Rich, and it's Asia Met Resources, ticker ARS, ARS. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours, and the top three most liked RNSs, and the most disliked RNS. It's also actually in the top three most liked, which is very odd. I think people started liking it before they read a bit further down about funding. I'll get to that in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, CEO of Prospects Oil & Gas. That's PXOG ticker. Ed, thanks for coming back on.
Well, thank you for asking me again.
No, well, it's exciting times. A lot of news they've got coming out from Prospects. And before we get into the news bit, for people not aware of Prospect Oil & Gas, even though you are one of the most followed companies on Vox Markets site there, can you give us a summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Yes, I can. Prospects Oil & Gas is an AIM-listed investment vehicle that specialises in oil and gas. It's a follow-on vehicle from a successful team that's had a number of oil companies which were either the major asset was divested of or the company was sold in 2013 and 2014. So we came into the company in 2015 with a view to repeating it, and we've been looking at oil and gas transactions in Europe since then. We signed our first transaction, which was taking a stake in a company called Hutton Poland at the beginning of the year. Hutton Poland has a number of licenses in Poland and licenses under application. The primary license is the COLO license, which has the Bolsillaw 1 prospect on it. We said at the beginning of the year that we would go and drill it in the fourth quarter of this year. And delighted to say, for those who may not have picked it up, that I did the well yesterday.
Yeah, well, so you announced, you officially in RS yesterday, spudded it, evening time Saturday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, 5:50, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
That was spot. Yeah. I mean, when this is happening, were you there, Ed, at all, or what?
I wasn't. I was there early in the week watching the rig be assembled, and we had a meeting of the local dignitaries, the local priest. So we had a tour of the site. The priest blessed the site, and then we had lunch. So we had my final visit, well, for the time being, yes, it was last week, with making sure everything was going to kick off on fine. There are some sites. There's some photos on our website if people are interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've looked at those. I've also shared them on social media, and it's all going well there. So when the spudding happened, it says 10 to 6 on the 10th of December. I mean, is obviously that's a time that's set in stone. How far in advance is that set, that time? Why 10 to 6?
I think it's when the football finished.
yeah.
No. It's an industrial process, this. So the guys have a program that they will follow right down to 1,500 meters, which is the target depth of the well. Mm-hmm. I suppose the spudding is one of those memorable dates and times and events in this. So they'd done stuff earlier in the day, and they were ready to go at that. I mean, they worked 24 hours. They will work 24 hours now, right until it's completed, through Christmas and New Year.
Okay. And so when do you expect, you know, first bit of news or results out from that drilling?
Well, on the schedule, there'll be, when I last looked at it, I think the 4th of January, the contract is turnkey. So if there's delays due to, you know, slow drilling, etc., we're not responsible for that. So it's, you know, there's still 1,500 meters to go. The timetable might change slightly, but they're pretty good at these things.
Yeah. Okay. And just to put people in the picture there, you know, what's this worth to Prospect Oil and Gas? What are you targeting? What ideally?
Well, on a gross basis, the prospective resources in the mid case at 87 BCF, mm-hmm. Which is a reasonable sized field onshore Europe. There is a CPR on a website, again, that gives a range of values, and the CPR has also worked out what EMV, an expected monetary value, that using gas prices, or actually electricity prices, lower than today's prices, means they've given us a value of 5.7 to 9.1 million pounds that could turn into effectively $95 million on NPV on the, yeah.
Marvellous stuff. All right. And so it's obviously going ahead there as planned. Like you say, you're doing what you said you would do. We're expecting news, obviously, in the next month or so. So there was another RNS out today. Can you explain what this is all about, please, Ed? It was, the title is the Cola License Update. And can you explain what this is?
Don't necessarily agree with the headline, but I didn't do that. I'm sorry. Very quickly, our partners in Hutton, Poland, have historically been a company called Hutton Energy. Hutton Energy is actually one of a for all intents and purposes, a stable of companies that the principals behind Hutton Energy, a number of the principals behind Hutton Energy are either, you know, principals or controlling stakes or major investors in a number of other companies, private and public. So they have transferred some of their holding in Hutton Energy, Hutton Poland, to Grand Gulf. We're pleased about this. Grand Gulf is a quoted company in Australia, but we can see that you know, it has a pool of cash that the, you know, directors and shareholders want to put to use. But as I say, you know, there is common shareholders. So the biggest shareholders in Grand Gulf are the biggest shareholders in Hutton Energy. It's the same executive chairman, crossover in directors and all sorts of things. So it's, again, it's another example of the partnership, you know, forward planning, getting ready for what we, you know, hope is a successful well here, because we want to go straight on to long-term testing. Yeah. And, you know, that helps fund, you know, what the principals are using a pool of cash ready available.
Yeah.
So it's not de-risking. It's not them getting out. It's just moving on. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's essentially, it's a bit of a sign of confidence in this project, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, they're certainly confident in the sense that they're forward planning about it. Arguably, again, they're putting one of their investments into a public vehicle. So yeah, again, it's in bright lights if it doesn't work. But yeah, they're all about forward planning. They're, you know, a good, sensible, mature lot.
Yeah. Okay. Marvelous. Well, listen, if anyone isn't following you on Vox, who's listening right now, could you give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please?
News flow, as you know, we've had active news flow, and that news flow has been consistent, and we've delivered on it. Our projects that we're looking at are all high impact, and we will, you know, keep an active business development team. Business development program, and thirdly, what we are doing in success case at Bolsa is a clear company maker. The numbers, you know, are attractive. We ask people to go and look at the CPR. They're all laid out there. I think that's three.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Ed, thank you very much for coming on. And like you said, there's news flow happening. Will be happening as we talk here, because things are going on right there in Bolsa 1, the well being drilled. So I look forward to speaking to you again when you have some more news out. Thanks very much for coming on, Ed.
It's a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time private investor, Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella?
Yeah, not bad, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Like I said, I just got back from last week. I was in Disneyland Paris, which is quite nice.
Oh, lovely.
And you did ask me, said, did you escape the markets? And I said, no, not really. I mean, I think it was a Vodafone. I got 2 gig of roaming data, so every now and again, I switch the phone on, check the markets, and then switch it back off and get back in the queue for a ride, you know? But
fantastic.
At one point, it was a good job. It was me, the wife, and the mother-in-law, my two sons, and their cousin, were all the same age, six and below, and we'd watched the magical Disney parade down Main Street.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah that's cool.
I said, listen, if we stay for another hour, we can see the Christmas lights switch on. And then my wife said, kids, what do you want to do? Stay for another hour or go back to the hotel swimming? And they went, swimming. I said, what are you talking about? You can go swimming any day of the week. You're not going to see the light switch on every day of the week. And they just kept chanting, swimming. So I was, okay. So we walked back to the hotel. I switched my mobile data on. And two of my mates, Pete and Steve from the Weekend Podcast, were like, look at Sky, up 30%. And that's, of course, that's our second trade in our experiment thing. I thought, I'm going to... I said, should we sell or sell? So we all agreed to sell at sort of 10 by 22 and a half pence. And we all got the same deal. And so it went through. It was quite nice, that, because I was like 20% profit on that. And if it wasn't for the kids insisting we go back to swimming when I wanted to stay in the park...
You've never seen it.
Yeah, I would never have gone on my laptop and sold. So thank goodness for them. Because I think it's down around just below £10 now, isn't it? So, you know, on that... literally within announcement...
It spiked up, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, on 21st Century Fox, the bid there. It spiked up, and then it slumped back a little bit. But we sort of got towards the top of the market there. So it was good timing. Good timing
for the kids. That was fantastic. Yeah. I love that one, because I remember having conversations on Twitter with loads of people about Sky. Mm. And I know loads of them bought it. So it's like, yeah, it's good. I didn't have them myself, but I can't buy everything.
Yeah,
but it's nice to see that people we know, mates of ours, are on Twitter and that all got involved, which is great.
Yeah, and part of me was thinking, do you know what? For a long time, I don't know why the ship kept going down and down and down, and I said, because the trading update wasn't that bad. It wasn't below expectations or anything. The last trading update they did was the revenues were better year on year than last year, and part of me thinks, you know, someone said, you're lucky there. So I said, yeah, we were lucky for the bid. But part of me thinks, hang on a sec, why was this price kept so low? And then I started sort of thinking, was it brought down to make that bid, you know, at 10.75 more attractive in some way? But also, when the share price goes down like that and fundamentals haven't changed that much, you think the risk of what's coming is priced in, you know? And I was thinking...
Yeah, the further it drops, the lower your risk is, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it... You know, I think sometimes a share gets itself locked into a downtrend.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the selling begets more selling. You know, people see the price sliding, so their emotions start going, oh, I'm really worried about my share. I'm really worried.
Yeah.
And it keeps going down, keeps going down, keeps going down. And then as soon as it rallies, they sell it because they're so worried. So it can never sort of get out of the downtrend easily.
Yeah,
because
people
just continually sell in any kind of rally it has.
Yeah.
And things just get into this sort of funk where they just keep going down. And then you start imagining reasons, and it's like, oh, it must be because the digital internet and the video on demand. And you think of all these brilliant, you know, totally plausible reasons as to why it's falling. But really, all you're doing is making excuses for the share price fall, when in reality, there could be nothing wrong, and then a massive bid comes in and you've just missed out on a big big jump up, you know.
Exactly. Do you know what? It's about that whole thing of blocking out noise, isn't it? You know, if you look at the Sky customers are pretty sticky. They're in contracts for a while.
Really sticky.
Like you said, people, when the share price is dropping, people look for bad news and more bad news is reported. And you think, hang on, ignore the noise. Look at the facts. Look at the trading statements previously. And is it really, you know, does it justify this falling off a cliff? And they think, no, it doesn't really, you know. So it's almost like having conviction of your, and
Easy after the event, but we always knew with Sky that Murdoch had put a bid in before. We also knew that the pound dollar was favourable for him. So, you know, it was pretty likely at some point there was a bid going to be coming.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So what are your thoughts at the moment, coming to the end of the year now?
Justin, I've had a year from hell, so I'm sort of like quite happy for 2016 to end. I'm not even talking about my personal life. I'm talking here about the markets. I mean, I'm down on the year and it's been a bloody tough year for me. The big thing that's hit me is I've really been too cautious, and you know, my sort of hedging strategy just went completely wrong. And people who've looked on my website, have read my blogs, will know that I've been kicking myself big time about that. But I've now completely revised how I'm going to do my hedging, and in essence, I'm going to be using really careful entries, but also having tight stop losses. So if the hedge position isn't needed, it's quickly closed out, and then I'm back long only sort of thing. That's been a real difficult one for me, and I think. You know, it's really been a year where if you're prepared to take risks, and if you're, if you've got in on the commodity trades, it's been a great year for you. And a lot of people will have done really well this year. But then equally, there's going to be a lot of people like myself who've not done particularly well, or just flat, or whatever. So I'm, I'd be quite happy to see 2016 finished.
I mean, do you think to a certain extent you are a victim of your own sophistication? You've become...
I think I am. There's so much truth to that.
Yeah, because so you're getting to know more financial, strategies, products, and all of a sudden you're thinking, I'll try that. And all of a sudden...
It overcomplicates it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the old thing, keep it simple, isn't it? Like you probably did better before last when you didn't know as much, you're thinking,
It's a crazy situation. I mean, I think what does me a bit is partly because I am a full-time investor, because I don't really have income from other sources. I have a small bit, but not much. I think I'm much more protective of my capital. I think people who have a full-time job as well and could earn a lot of money just from their own, other situation, they can afford to take more risk, because if they get it wrong, they've still got a nice income coming in, and they're sort of safe for the future.
Yes.
I don't want to go in that situation where I'm having to work again for somebody. I just can't imagine anything worse.
Yeah.
So I'm very protective of my capital, and I think this makes me quite risk averse.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's a fine line, is it, between risking enough to make enough, but then also protecting your capital and worrying about that? Because, like I said, when you've got only that income, you've got to be quite cautious, but also too cautious. It's a fine line, too cautious, and you may not earn anything,
I think the position I'm in, where I sort of like, when we have years with lots of difficulties, like we did this year with Brexit and all, and the US election and whatever, when we have years like that with lots of difficulties around, I think I'm quite happy to play a cautious game. Mm. I don't want to be taking unnecessary risks. I'm quite happy to sort of stay roughly where I am in those difficult years. When we have the better years, I want to really put my foot down, and to accelerate hard and to leverage up and to really make the most of it. Having said that, 2017 looks like it could be quite a tough year so many ways. Markets look really stretched to me. The US markets especially, they've broken out, they've shot up, and you sort of think, is this going to be justified, or is there going to be a pullback at some point?
Yeah, and also what's been difficult this year is that things have flipped completely, in reverse of what we thought was going to happen. Like, for example, Brexit, a massive sell-off, we sort of saw that, but even though it shocked people, that the results shocked people, first and foremost, a massive sell-off, then a massive rebound, and the same with Trump.
Rebound's incredible.
And the same with Trump, massive sell-off, massive rebound. So, it's almost like, unless you're a very swift trader, and you're in and out quickly, then it's, you know, it's essentially, what do you sit back and just watch and observe? It's hard to know, isn't it, really, you know?
It really has been a tough year. I mean, one of the things that's been quite noticeable as well is it's almost like we're trading Forex when we're trading shares. Because so many stocks have been influenced by the pound dollar and the pound euro and whatever. So it's almost like buying shares has become a proxy for trading Forex. So we're all Forex traders now. That's a weird thing.
Yeah.
That's one of the hardest things I think there's been this year. And that's the reason the FTSE 100 has been so strong for much of the year, is because of this weak pound compared to the dollar.
Yeah.
But it's noticeable that that's changing, because if you look at the chart, you know, it really tanked down to, what was it, 118 or something on that flash crash kind of incident we had on the pound dollar. But since that, the last sort of 8 weeks or more, it's been a really clear uptrend.
Yeah,
and that means that, you know, the pound has been recovering lost gain. The pound's effectively been strengthening against the dollar. So a lot of all this talk of weak pound, it may not ring true if it keeps rising like it is.
Yeah, and do you know what? Playing into that, obviously, of course, we just mentioned before we came on about some of the income stocks, the bigger stocks, have taken a bit of a, you know, they've fallen back. Like GSK, for example, I looked at that last night on the chart and thought, well, that's coming down to 14.5 quid, and that's, you know, it's or towards that, and it's bouncing off that area. And that's good support levels there, you know.
Maybe the divvy there must be over 5%. What was it, 5.5 or something, I would think?
Yeah.
I mean, I think for the sort of long-term buyer who's fairly cautious, who wants these nice mega caps that give him or her a nice steady income, it's looking really attractive for things like GSK. AZN, AstraZeneca, that's another one where the yield must be over 4% now.
Yeah.
And you've got a chance of a bid still, and you've got a lovely oncology pipeline and stuff, so AZN looks really good. National Grid, NG.. That looks really sweet. I mean, I think there the yield must be 5%. And they've done that thing where they've sold the gas distribution business, and they're going to do a special dividend and some share buybacks starting next year. And I think that's equivalent to like another 5% or something.
So there's
quite a few of these defensive big names that are actually looking pretty attractive.
And when it comes down to it, when you've got big stocks like this, you know, and you can see nothing wrong fundamentally with the company, you know, it's essentially the old simple adage of buy low, sell high, isn't it? You know, wait for the price to come to you, and pick up the dividend for as long as you want to until it starts recovering, you know, and reinvest the dividend, and you get some compound growth there. And
it's a sort of fairly low-risk way of doing things, I would think, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's not by any means a high-risk strategy to do that.
No, exactly. It's just patience. I don't know who said it, but I think it's been attributed to Warren Buffett, but he will look at a company, and he'll say within 5 minutes he will know whether he's going to invest in a company, look at the balance sheet. But and then he says, basically, he'll wait for a stock to come to him, you know?
He knows his level he wants to pay.
Yeah, and of course, that has happened. You know, we'll be, you know, sitting on a bullish market, and you'll think the price will never come back in a certain stock, and all of a sudden you'll have a couple of sell-offs, and it'll, you know, we'll have a month of a volatile market, and you realise you can pick up a stock for a lot cheaper than you did a month ago.
When you never
thought it would happen, you know? It's all about a bit of patience sometimes, isn't it? Yeah?
And I think another interesting one at the moment is that IG index, IGG.
You know,
because of the business around the spread betting and the regulation and stuff, you know, there is a risk of a falling knife there. I mean, if you buy IGG today, there's nothing to stop it falling a load more. You know, the regulator could, you know, get up in arms and all the rest of it. But I suspect we're getting pretty near the bottom now. It's looking quite cheap.
Yes.
And, you know, you can use stop losses to sort of, you know, to avoid the risk of it dropping further. Or perhaps the clever thing to do is just to buy, you know, slowly build a stake in IGG. I mean, that's the market leader. If other companies, like, you know, all the smaller spread betting companies are going to struggle because of a new regulatory environment, the ones who benefit will be the big boys, and IGG is the largest one that does it, you know.
Yeah, I've been looking at IGG, I think, like I said, I'm looking at almost a PE 10 pretty much, and considering it's a market leader, like you say. I mean, now what's going in its favour is, like I said, this uncertainty for investors who are thinking of getting in, the uncertainty, because I've heard now that other countries are looking about, tightening their CFD policies and all this. And so this uncertainty will play out in the price, you know. And I think when you can see...
And it probably has already, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, I think... But yeah, it's one of those companies that said this won't, you know, have any effect on their balance sheet for at least another year because these regulations won't come in.
Yeah, they've got a massive cash pile as well. So I'd imagine that even if they have trouble, they'll be able to keep that dividend going and stuff for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I was reading up on the last few tradings there, and it's one of those companies where the dividend seems to be, you know, very strong and there's no threat at the moment. And like I said, these regulations will take a while to come in anyway. And in the meantime, like you say, the smaller guys will suffer. The bigger guys can take it on board and they'll probably, you know, sweep up some of their customers.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When
you look at what the FCA actually said in its statement,
yeah,
the things it proposed, like reducing the amount of leverage you could have, I don't think that's going to have as big an effect as people think. Because, for instance, they were saying, what was it, the maximum leverage that a new customer could have would be 25 times leverage, 25 to 1.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at most shares, they're only on like 4 times leverage or 5 times leverage or 10 times leverage on a FTSE 100. So how the hell do you get to 25? You can still do some pretty risky stuff if you're allowed leverage of 25 times.
Yeah.
They're talking about limited risk. Well, already IGG do guarantee, you know, limited risk accounts where you have like guaranteed stop losses, so you can't lose more than your margin money, you know. What was the other one? They talk about, I mean, binary bets. I mean, I would imagine binary bets are a pretty peripheral thing to IGG. You know, it's probably only 5% of their business or something. I don't imagine it's much, so I can't see that having that big an effect.
Also, they did the same in their RNS. They looked at these situations and, you know, their system or strategy is very much in line with the... I mean, they probably have to say that, of course, because... Being a market leader, like you said, you know, I think they're thinking ahead here. They've got to, haven't they? I mean, it's not as if these are out of the blue.
They'd admit it, wouldn't they? It's like, if, you know, already the share price has been battered, it was a great day to put out bad news. If they really thought it was going to affect them badly, I'm sure they would have said, we're going to struggle in this particular part. But they didn't really say that. So it does seem like a sort of bit of a fuss about nothing, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Marvellous. All right, so, what have we covered there? GSK, AstraZeneca, IGG, NG, and anything else you're looking at?
I mean, just the usual suspects, really. I mean, one I'm really, really favourite of at the moment is UTW, utility wise. I just still think that looks so cheap, and it's had, you know, it's really got momentum behind it now.
Yeah.
They put out a thing today about they've got a new deal with a business stream, which is some sort of it's the third largest water provider, you know, non-domestic water supplier. And they've just done a collaboration with them where basically UTW will be able to market to Business Stream's customers and vice versa. So that looks a good partnership.
Well, I think last time we spoke about them, we were saying that it was down around about 125, 130. I was saying, I said, look at a good support level there at 120 odd, and it's now 189. So it's done really well from there.
It started the move. And the thing is, it's still incredibly cheap. I mean, I think it's on a PE of like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Even after the move up, you know, you could easily see that on a PE of 15, which gives you massive upside.
Yeah.
I mean, the concerns are the usual things around the accounting side, but look at the cash flow they've had. You know, their last statement, they've wiped out all debt. You know, the cash is coming from somewhere if you've got rid of all your debt. So, they must be doing something pretty well.
Is old Neil Woodford still a holder there? He used to be quite a big holder.
Oh, yeah. Massive holder. He owns about 26% of the company or something.
Yeah.
So I still like that one. TTR, I still like, you know, 32 Red, the gaming company. That's done quite well. Oh, another one that's got quite beaten up lately that might be worth a look is Pays. PaySafe, P-A-Y-S.
All right.
Yeah, you know, they do like online, you know, e-payments, online payments, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's on a PE of like, I don't know, 10 or something. Just looks really quite cheap. It's got massively beaten up in recent weeks.
Marvellous. All right.
Well, that may be a pound-dollar thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think we covered enough stocks there. Listen, please, everyone, do your own research on those stocks if you've got time.
Listen,
fella, thanks for coming on. And if you don't speak before Christmas, have a nice one, and we'll speak in the new year.
And you, mate, yeah, good stuff. Yeah, I'll speak to you later. Thanks, Just. Bye.
Okay, today's suggested one for your watchlist is Asia Met Resources. I'm no stranger to this company, ARS. I do hold stock in the company. It's suggested by Rich. I've had to fill in a bit of this because under the title there, what does the company do? Rich has put, you know them. I have. I've had Tony Manini on the podcast several times. I do hold stock in the company. You know, I believe in the strategy and the background of Tony and everything. So it's worth doing your own research. Let me just say, everything here in this podcast is just information. Nothing here is investment advice, okay? It's information on which to base your research. So what does the company do? Asia Met Resources is a junior company focused on the exploration and development of its portfolio of large copper gold deposits on the Indonesian islands of Kalimantan and Sumatra, adjacent to the key growth markets in Asia. Both deposits contain NI 43-101 compliant mineral resources and remain open in several directions. How many shares does the company have in issue? At the moment, 622 million, and they're placing another 80 million shares. What's the current price and market cap? 2.5 pence, around 16 million market cap. Revenue, profit and loss, there's no revenue at the moment. They've been going from explorer to development to producer in the next 2 years. Their loss for 6 months ended 30th of June 2016 was $808,000. How much cash or debt does the company have? No debt. At the 30th of September 2016, they had $701,000 in cash and are just about to raise approximately $2 million in cash via placing at 2.3 pence. So list three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, they're raising $2 million to complete a BKM project feasibility study. And their pre-economic assessment for BKM back in April showed target annual production of 25,000 tons of LME grade A copper metal, after tax net present value of $204.3 million at a 10% discount rate, and a gross revenue of $1.27 billion. And this is just one of three assets they have. Butong, their other copper gold asset, is around four times as large as BKM, which they're obviously that is their prime focus at the moment. Reason two, the price of copper is rising. Even Goldman Sachs, who were the most bearish, that's probably Tony Manini there, who were the most bearish on copper, express copper prices to rise, and they've got a $6,200 a ton over the next 6 months target on copper. They've also lifted their 3, 6, and 12 month forecasts on copper prices. And reason three, I've expanded this a bit because what Rich put was, you need to talk to Steve Hughes from Ars. Hilarious. But I've also added that CEO Tony Manini and the management have a proven track record for taking small copper exploration projects through to mid-tier producers. And check out Oxiana. Like I said, do your own research on all companies mentioned on the podcast. All right, time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, Andalas Energy, ADL. That hasn't been there for a while. At four, Solo Oil, at Solo. At three, Buckley Energia, that's BKY. At two, Ascent Resources, AST. At one, CloudTag, CTAG. Suspended at the moment, but people are obviously following them, expecting news to come out very soon. Well, I don't know if it's very soon. Who knows when news is coming out? Nobody knows, apart from, I assume, management. All right. Here are the top three most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. At three, Seeing Machines, that's SEE, capital raising. At two, now, this is also the most disliked RNS, Proxama, trading and funding update. Like I said, that's most disliked, and they had more dislikes than likes. So I think a lot of investors, they were liking that, and then they may have read the funding part of the RNS a bit further down, and may have disliked it as well. And number one, the most liked RNS today was the Kola license update. Ed chatted about that on the podcast earlier. And by all means, listen, get the app. It's free. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Download it. And you follow companies. Hit the follow button on any company you hold or doing research on. And then you'll get RNSs sent to the front screen of your phone whenever the company releases one. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.